You're listening to Baking to the B-Movies with Ashley and Steph, broadcasting from the woods of Western Massachusetts. They're here to talk about the beautiful, the gory, the nonsensical, and of course, mostly bad horror filmmaking that we all know and love, while creating recipes inspired by these wonderful abominations. You can follow Baking to the B-Movies on Instagram, at Baking to the B-Movies, and on Twitter, at Baking to B Movies. These ladies dig deep into these movies, and some of the topics covered are disturbing. So this is your spoiler warning and explicit content warning. Listener discretion is advised. Now onward to good food, good friends, and movies so bad they literally cannot stop talking about them.
Welcome back to Baking to the B-Movies. My name is Ashley.
My name is Steph.
Thank you all so much for joining us today. Always a pleasure to be back in the studio.
Hell yeah.
Happy New Year.
Happy New
Year. I know we're like a couple years late. A couple weeks late with the Happy New Year. But it is now 2025. We did it. We made it.
Yay.
Can't wait to see what fresh hell awaits us.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. So, Steph, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you doing? How was your trip to Vegas?
Oh, it was wonderful. I was actually going to talk about that momentarily. Before we... Yeah. it's a winter wonderland today. So, to go from, like, the desert where it was a little chilly, but, like, sunny and nice and, like, you know, it's the desert.
Right.
To go from that to, like, a winter wonderland. Like, it is snowing outside as we speak. It is coming down like crazy.
But not nearly as cold as it was this week.
No. And I think it's because the wind chill wasn't there. Like, how windy it was.
It was so windy this week. Which absolutely insane.
And, like, obviously not just here, but, like, California right now is currently on fire. Like,
thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. Thoughts, prayers. Food, rain. Blankets, like literally anything to help people out there. But my goodness, yeah, it's the wind just makes everything 10,000 times worse.
Yep.
So before we get into today's episode and like recaps and all that good stuff, quick little, you know, must do that we do at the beginning of every episode. We are available wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like and subscribe. If you're looking for past episodes leading up to this one, if you need to get caught up, we have an RSS feed that is linked on all of our social media. You can check that out. And our social media, because I had said that going into 2025, I was done with Twitter. I'm done with it.
Yeah, as you should be. Because, we should have been done with Twitter a year ago.
You know, I really tried. I really tried to tough it out because I was a Twitter OG. Like, I had one of the first Twitters when Twitter was a thing way back when. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
All right.
I had that shit in, like, was it, like, 2009 or something? I had it fucking forever ago. And it has just gone to complete dog shit. And it's no longer fun to use. It's like, it's just you're arguing with bots. You could be like, oh, I hope everybody has a great day today, and you have like 1,001 AI bots being like, you know, how can you wish that we have a good day when, and it just it's just a spark stupid debate. It's never like a real person. It's always AI nonsense. So we're done with Twitter, but we do have Instagram, because even though Mark Zuckerberg is a fucking tool, Instagram is just pictures. It's pictures.
Mostly, yeah.
It's hard to fuck that up. So you can follow us on Instagram. We are at Baking to the B Movies. and you can email us directly at bakingtobmovies@gmail.com. And depending on whether or not there is a national TikTok ban, maybe we'll get a TikTok account this year. Maybe we'll do like TikTok dances while we cook.
I was thinking maybe like Threads.
Wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, Threads is essentially linked to Instagram.
Right,
so
exactly.
Maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll just start up on Threads. Yeah. My concern is I just worry that it's going to turn into Twitter 2.0.
Yeah. I mean, that is, you know, a thought, but if that happens, then we just delete it.
Yeah, we just get rid of it. But right now we are on Instagram because it's kind of hard to get into any kind of discourse when you're just posting fun pictures, you know, every couple days. So Baking to the Bee Movies at Instagram, bakingtothebeemovies@gmail.com. And like I said, our RSS feed, it's hard to say R and then RSS. Like, I'm like, Ursus.
Our RSS
feed is linked on our social media, and there you can find all of our past episodes.
Don't mind Ashley, she just pooped her butt. trying to talk.
I know, is the poop coming out of my mouth? So Steph, how was your new year? what did you do?
I did nothing. You did nothing. I think we got I think I actually even cooked that evening. Yeah, I think I either made Andy play Silent Hill again or we just watched Sister Wives.
Yeah.
Something.
But you know what though? Like a cozy night in is perfect.
Yes. Exactly.
I mean, you had mentioned Vegas. I went to Las Vegas for New Year's Eve because I am a perpetually 21-year-old who's like, woo! And in no way does my lower back hurt every morning when I get up.
right.
But no, my business partner just moved to Henderson, Nevada from California. So I went out there to see his new place and spend New Year's with him. And we went down to the Strip on New Year's Eve before it got really, really crazy busy.
I would imagine it would be insane.
Yeah. And it was nice. You know, we got to have a drink, got to go like check out the Bellagio and like all their decorations before they take them down because they still had all their Christmas stuff up.
Right.
And then we went back to his apartment and he made a lovely meal. And we watched so here's the fun thing. So we watched like local news, like the Vegas, I think it was like Channel 13 in Vegas, I think it was. It's like their local news station.
Yeah.
It was chaos.
Really?
It was like, think of, you know how like some high schools have like a news team that's like, remember like the South Park episode where they're like
super cool action news.
Super cool action news. Yeah. They're like, hey Butters, any celebrity sightings? And he's like, nobody yet. Like back to you, Cartman. You know, like it was like that. But it kept cutting back and forth between Channel 13's like local coverage of like the there was no ball drop in Vegas. They just counted down.
Right.
So it went between like their New Year's Eve like celebration, which was just pandemonium. It was like it was reporters who seemed like they were reporting for the first time. and then it would cut to like the New Year's Eve like Times Square ball drop, which is such a polished production because you have like performances and like reporters that know how to interview people.
Right.
And it kept switching back and forth between the two. So it was like you're watching like this very polished, like, you know, a reporter talking to like fucking it's Jennifer Lopez or something. I'm just pulling that out of my ass. But like talking to Jennifer Lopez and asking all these like questions about like, what are your resolutions for like 2025? And like, what do you hope to accomplish in the coming new year? And what do you look back on and reflect about 2024? And then it cuts to Channel 13 and there's a reporter with his back to the camera interviewing somebody in like an abandoned parking lot. It was fucking chaos.
You know what? I like that though. That is real. That is very real.
It was so fun. It was so fun. But the best part is that they got the timing wrong. So like when it was counting down to midnight, my business partner was looking at his phone. He was like, oh, it's the new year. But they were still like 30 seconds off.
Wow.
So funny.
That's even better.
It was so funny. And then on New Year's Day, we went and saw Nosferatu. And it was so good.
Yeah, I saw it on Christmas Day.
Yeah, it's nice. Okay, so yeah, you're the holiday movie. I wanted to see it on Christmas Day, and then I just didn't get around to it. And my business partner was like, let's go see Nosferatu at the movie theater at Sam's Town. So he got to see Sam's Town for the first time. I got to see Count Orlok hang Dong.
Yes! For those who haven't seen Nosferatu,
he hangs Dong.
Orlok hangs Dong in this one. Only for like a few seconds though.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's it. It's not, you know, overindulgent. Also, I gotta
say something because that movie, like Gothic romance and like
Victorian
romance. Yeah. What I love about that is this dude crosses an ocean, brings the plague, wipes out a bunch of people, all so he can like get to this woman that he's connected with. Fellas, you have no excuse. Buy the flowers, buy the chocolates. If you're not willing to make a plague ship and wipe out entire town in Germany for the woman that you love.
Right?
Like, that's the kind of romance I want. I want you to bring yeah, yourself. Hear
that business partner?
You hear that business partner? Get yourself on a plague ship. Come see me.
And then you could sit out on your widow's peak.
Yes.
Or widow's walkway.
Yes.
Whatever the hell it's called. Wait for your business partner like, come to me. On his plague ship.
On his plague ship. Although.
Like, come into the harbor of Massachusetts.
Well, I was going to say, he'd have to fly in, so it'd be a plague plane. So it'd be like an American Airlines plane.
So he wouldn't just get on a boat from, like, California and go around, like.
I mean, that would be, like, the ideal. Epic. Like, yeah, like, the more epic of the journeys. But I feel like if he just got on, like, a Delta flight and then got off the Delta flight and all these rats got off the Delta flight, that would be amazing. That would also be amazing.
That would be incredible.
So, Steph, we have a couple more episodes this season before we take a little bit of a winter break. Mm-hmm. And then we will thaw out in the spring and come back stronger than ever.
Right.
So before we talk about this next movie, because we have like a couple of really stellar movies to close out this season. I was yeah. really excited with the last two that you had picked.
Yeah.
We just have to kind of rewind real quick to our last episode that we dropped right before New Year's.
Yeah.
Actually, I think we put it up on New Year's Day just to kind of be like, yeah. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
We had talked about Fright Night.
Oh, so good.
And my love of Chris Sarandon.
Yeah.
And I had made peanut butter chocolate mug cakes.
Yes.
And I think overall they were good. They were a little dry.
Yes.
Yes. They were a little dry, which made me upset. But you and Andy had a good suggestion. I had put it in the recipe, like, if anybody else encountered that problem, just put, like, a little butter in there.
Yeah.
Because my recipe didn't use butter, but I feel like butter softens it up a little bit more. Yeah. So if you guys do that recipe and you encounter that issue, just throw, like, a teaspoon of butter in there, and that should fix the problem. You should
help moisten it up.
Yeah, moisten. Moisten it up.
Moisten it up.
So yeah, we have a really fun movie. This is also from 1985. Mm-hmm. We've got two 1985 mm-hmm. movies in a row. Mm-hmm. The 80s were just peak
gloriousness.
Peak horror.
Gloriousness.
So do you want to I think we can get into it. Do you want to tell the audience what we're going to be talking about today? The tender tale that we're going
to Yeah, the tender story of a scientist gone mad trying to bring life back to the dead. Have we seen it before? 100%.
Oh, yeah.
It's literally a Frankenstein story.
Yeah.
Have we seen it with a very unpleasant sexual assault scene? Mm. Also, yes, because this is in that movie. Reanimator. Reanimator, one of my very, very favorites.
Such a good one. 1985, clocking in at an hour and 26 minutes. Great cast in this. We have Jeffrey.
Cast is phenomenal.
Yeah, we have Jeffrey Combs. Bruce Abbott, we have Barbara Crampton.
My bae.
And we have David Gale, as I believe he plays Dr. Hill.
Yep.
Anybody else that stands out to you in this one? It's a pretty core group.
It's a small cast. We have Robert Sampson. He plays the Dean, which is also Barbara Crampton's character's father.
Yes. Yeah, she's the Dean's daughter in this. Yeah, it's like a core group of characters and then like some, you know, like extra characters that are kind of floating around that are a lot of fun to watch. And this one kicks off too. Like the movie starts like excellent. It's in like Switzerland.
Zurich. Yeah, the Zurich Institute of Medicine in Switzerland where our protagonist there, Herbert West, you don't know he's a protagonist until like kind of like middle way in the movie towards the end. Is basically with Dr. Hans Gruber.
Which is Alan Rickman's character in Die Hard.
Yes. So
because I heard the name and I'm like, wait, what?
So he dies and it's basically, we don't really know how, I don't think.
We don't know how he dies.
Yeah, and Herbert West, played by Jeffrey Combs.
Is his protege.
And he's trying to bring him back to life.
Yes.
He does work on it, or he does get it to work, but it horrific side effects and things just go awry. And of course, all the hospital staff here are like, get him out of there. Like, you just killed Dr. Gruber. And he's like, no, I didn't. I brought him back to life.
Yeah, basically.
And then that was that.
Yeah, that's like the lead into the opening credits is like these cops show up at the hospital because mm-hmm. this woman, this like orderly has called because there's this chaos coming from Dr. Gruber's office. And when they get there, Herbert West is like, he's trying to inject him with something. And Dr. Gruber, like, stands back up. Yeah, but we have, like, that great, like, scanner's head exploding scene where, like, his eyes are, like, bulging out of his head. This movie has fantastic effects.
The effects in this super movie are fun. Absolutely phenomenal.
Super fun. And that's just kind of the lead-in to the opening credits, which, by the way, the opening theme, it's a bop.
Isn't it amazing?
It's an absolute
like,
banger.
The opening credits are so fun.
It slaps.
It does.
It slaps so hard.
It's great.
I rewound it a couple times because it has like that great bass line. I was like, this is so, it's like so good.
Right.
So after the opening theme and the opening credits, and this is an H.P. Lovecraft story.
100%.
Because we are immediately taken to Arkham, Massachusetts, which... H.P. Lovecraft, like, fictional town. Yeah, for those of you who might be wondering, it's not real. It's no Arkham, Massachusetts here.
Yeah, Arkham is basically Danvers.
I was going to say, it's as close to Danvers as you can
get.
That
is where DC Comics got it from.
Yeah.
It's not their original idea.
Right.
But that's where, like, Arkham Asylum came from.
Right, right.
So the original Arkham Asylum was Lovecraft.
Yes.
And then we move over to... Miskatonic University. I don't know if you noticed this, but I'm wearing my Miskatonic University hoodie.
Oh my gosh, I'm just, oh wow, that's so cool.
Super fun.
I love it.
Yeah, Andy bought this for me a while ago. Oh. I don't know where, but he did.
The dark web.
Yeah, right?
Wait, he gets everything on Temu, so it's probably it's from
not,
Temu.
It's definitely not from Temu because it's not 1,000 times too small. So anyways, yeah, so we're back in Miskatonic, which is essentially... based on the Ivy League schools of Massachusetts and Rhode Island, specifically Brown. But it's basically, Lovecraft basically has a conglomerata of, you know, what he bases his things on.
Yes. So. And we're at a hospital in Arkham, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and we're introduced to our main character, Dan.
Yep.
And Dan is like a doctor in training. This is it's a hospital, but there's like a lot of medical students there that are getting like hands-on experience.
Yeah,
with...
it's like a medical school.
Yes.
It's like a hospital
slash university.
Yes.
And poor Dan is just desperately trying to revive this woman who has passed away. Yes. And he's doing compressions, you know. They're doing the defibrillator, and I love the bedside manner of the woman that works there that's just basically like, call it, and he's just like, I'm not ready to call it. She's like, call it. Like, I want that doctor when I'm dying who's just going to throw in the towel immediately.
Well, we also don't know how long they've been trying to bring this poor woman back to life.
Right.
And so one thing that she says that's very important is to him, to Daniel Kane, you need to know when to stop.
Yeah.
So, like, that's actually not bad advice for someone working on becoming a doctor, to be quite frank.
Right.
You know, you have to know when it's done.
Right.
So, not a bad line, but yeah, I agree. Like, how long are you going to try to revive this person?
So, unfortunately for Dan, you know, he can't resuscitate the woman, and it always leads to, like, a sense of, like, defeat when that...
Yeah.
Doesn't pan out the way that you want. You can't save somebody. He's also responsible for bringing her body down to the morgue.
Yes.
Like, adding insult to injury, a little salt to that wound. He's got to bring this woman's corpse down to the morgue.
Well, he's a student, you know.
It's true.
So
it's part
he's
of...
low man on the totem pole.
Yeah. So he wheels this woman's, like, covered corpse down to the morgue. There is a security guard outside the morgue, like, just kind of... And he's, I think, my favorite character.
He's a trip.
he's a lot of fun. He's really fun. And, you know, friendly rapport, Dan goes in to bring this woman's body into the freezer where they store all the other bodies. Mm-hmm. And is it there that we see Dr. Hill for the first time? He is, like, performing a procedure on a dead body. He's, like, has, like, I don't want to say it's, like, a laser, but it's, like, he's, like, going into the brain of one of the bodies.
Yeah, it's like a lobotomy kind of.
Yeah, he's doing, like, lobotomy.
Except not, like, an old school lobotomy where they... use the pick through the eye.
Yeah.
He's using a laser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's using a laser on one of the corpses, presumably for scientific purposes.
Yeah.
Dr. Hill is a revered doctor slash scientist, we find out.
And, you know, teacher.
Yeah.
Like, he teaches at the school.
And as Dan is exiting the morgue after, you know, placing this woman in there and kind of organizing her, the table that she's on, Dr. Hill is greeted by the dean of the school who has a new third year student with him, played by Jeffrey Combs. It's Herbert West. And Herbert is fucking insufferable.
I love Herbert. He's so articulate.
He does.
Also, he does great job in that role.
Oh, he's like, great. He's great in that role. But he does need an ass kicking. Because he's very out of pocket with some of the shit that he says. He is out of pocket.
Yeah.
So the dean explains to Dr. Hill that, you know, Herbert's going to be joining both Dan, because Dan is in Dr. Hill's class.
Yeah.
He's going to be joining Dr. Hill and Dan with their studies.
And doesn't the dean say that he is a little unorthodox? Like, he's a different character,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. He said, well, he does indicate that Herbert had previously been studying under Hans Gruber.
In Zurich, or Switzerland.
Yeah. And Herbert wastes no time in calling Dr. Hill out on, like, basically plagiarizing Hans Gruber's work.
Yeah.
Like, in front of the whole group of them, he's like, oh, you know, I've read your work. It's fascinating. Some would say that it's, you know, exactly like Dr. Gruber's work. And that you, but, you know, he goes off on him. And I was like, ooh, oh boy. Oh, this kid is due for a beating. Like, this kid's going to get a beat down.
I sided with Herbert West on this. I never liked Dr. Hill from the beginning.
Oh, yeah, no.
He was a pretentious crap head.
I didn't like anyone.
You didn't even like Dan or his girlfriend? They seemed pretty normal.
I'll get into my thoughts on Meg momentarily, but which we are going to meet her in a moment.
Yes,
because,
we are.
Because after all of this, Dan is... Meg. Shut up, Meg. Dan is, after this introduction to Herbert West, who is unorthodox and, you know, rude, incredibly rude, Dan is putting up a flyer on, like, the student bulletin board at the hospital because he's looking for a new roommate.
Yep.
I think he's a third year medical student. I think Meg, his girlfriend or fiance, I think they're engaged. She's also a student there, I believe. And her father is the dean.
Yes.
And we meet Meg. They indicate that they're engaged. Like, Dan does introduce her later on as his fiance.
Yeah.
And they're back at Dan's house, you know, after they bone, you know, they meet up at the hospital and then they go home and bone.
I want to know if you noticed at that scene, after they bone, obviously.
Yeah.
The poster on the back of his wall.
No, what was it?
It was a Talking Heads poster.
Amazing.
We'll go to the Talking Head a little bit later.
Yeah, amazing.
But it was just very, very, very topical.
Oh, the symbolism.
Yeah.
So much symbolism.
Anyways.
So, you know... They go home, they bone, and they're, you know, Meg's like, I have to get home, I have to, you know, my father's going to be looking for me, or worrying about me, or whatever, and they're, you know, they're playing around, and all this other shit, and Meg goes to leave the apartment slash house that Dan lives in, and who should be waiting on the doorstep but Herbert West, who has found Dan's flyer looking for a roommate, and is ready to move in, like, right then and there, under one condition: does the place have a basement?
Yep, and... It does.
It does.
So good for him.
Yeah.
The first thing he did, was looking, like,
yeah.
Look for
oh,
the
yeah.
basement
he
and then looked at the room after the fact?
He comes in and, you know, Dan introduces him to Meg and Dan's like, I have to get dressed because, like, he just got done banging his girlfriend. He's going to put some pants on and show him around. And, you know, Meg is almost immediately put off by Herbert.
She
she's just, like, not feeling
not
it.
Like
she's
Herbert
not
West.
Feeling that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, you know, did I startle you? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, like, just, you know, it's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, like, one of the first things he asks, because he kind of makes his way into the apartment and is looking around. He's like, does it have a basement?
And he
goes
him to the basement.
Yeah, he goes down. He's like, it's perfect. I'll give you first, last, and the security deposit. And he whips out this wad
of cash. Yeah.
And Meg's telling Dan, like, well, maybe you should, like, have more people come and take a look and, you know, figure out who you want to live. But Dan is... eager for the money.
Yeah, he's got the cash right now. Yeah. There's no reason for him not to.
Yeah.
Like, Herbert West might be a little unorthodox and out there, but he's in school with Dan.
Yeah.
So, it's not that weird.
Yeah.
He's just got a weird personality, sure, why
not?
And he's got all this cash to throw at me.
Yes.
Which is a big tell as to, you know, renting a room out.
Yeah, can you afford it?
Can you afford it? Exactly.
But this is why I live alone, because I don't need a Herbert. I don't need to be living with a Herbert West.
Really?
I don't need to be living with...
You don't think... Like, if someone came up to me and wanted to rent a room and was like, do you have a basement? And we're like, yeah. I would do it.
I feel like if Herbert West was like, I'd like to move in, and I was like, okay, do you have first, last, and security deposit? And he whipped out a wad of cash. I'd be like, oh, he's a drug dealer. Like, who carries around that much cash? Like, I can't be having this in my apartment. This is just going to be a magnet for trouble. And also, when you find out what Herbert's doing in the apartment, yeah.
I would still be 100% on board.
Of course you would. So ultimately, Herbert moves in. And it immediately causes some friction between Dan and Meg. Prior to this, like, scene that is kind of the catalyst to why Herbert needs the basement, why, you know, what Herbert's doing, we do get a scene where Meg, her father, and Dr. Hill, who has joined them for dinner, they're sitting at the dean's house, you know, kind of toasting to Dr. Hill's, like, generous contributions to the to the university. He's like a big, he donates, he pulls in a lot of big donors. But he has like, there's sort of this like, Dr. Hill's like, you know, he's very like, I don't want to say flirtatious, but kind of like insistent with Meg. Like, oh, you should.
Gross.
Yeah, he's gross. Because he's like twice her age.
Like triple her
triple,
age.
Yeah, triple her age.
Like, he also does this thing where he's kind of like, he does this mesmerism thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, like the power of suggestion is very big with this particular guy, which we'll get into a little bit later in the movie.
Right.
So he basically is able to convince like the dean things. Yeah. Megan or Meg things. Yeah. So.
Well, Meg at one point is like, you know, she tells her father, like, Dan and I have a study date tonight.
Yeah.
And, you know, I should probably get going. And there's a knock at the door, and she goes to answer the door, and Dr. Hill is asking the dean, like, do you think it's wise that she's dating Dan? Like, do you think that's a good idea? And, like, and why is it any business of his? We'll never know.
Exactly. And also, I mean, we've been introduced to Dan, and he seems like...
Seems like a straight-up dude.
Yeah, he seems like a perfectly fine dude.
Yeah,
you know?
Seems like a nice guy.
Like, he's not beating her. Yeah. Like, he treats her right.
Yeah,
like,
he's sweet.
Yeah. Plus, he's going to be a doctor.
Yeah. Oh, my God, girl, yes. Like, find yourself a doctor. So he does make this, like, kind of off-the-cuff comment about, like, Meg's relationship with Dan not being appropriate. And then he says something to Meg about her, like, looking beautiful or something. But the way that he says it is very,
super
like...
Super creepy.
Super creepy. And as someone who has dealt with, like, significantly older men, don't fucking do that. Like, oh, God.
And that's significantly older.
Significantly.
So, like... 20 to 30 plus years.
Yeah. Like Meg versus if Meg's a med student, she's got to be like in her
early 20s,
and this dude's clearly in his like 60s.
Yes, at least if not older.
It's gross.
Yeah.
So back at Dan's apartment, you know, they're studying and Dan's trying to get a little flirty with Meg, and she's just not in the mood, and she just kind of lays it out of like, where's Herbert?
Yeah.
Like, how come we don't see him? We don't hear from him.
Yeah.
Also, my cat is missing. Like, what the fuck is my cat?
Dan has a cat named, what was it?
Rufus.
Yeah. It's a great name for a cat.
Yeah.
Anyways, but the cat's missing.
And, you know, and we see the cat early on in the movie. Like, it's always, like, vying for their attention.
Yeah.
Like, it jumps on him and shit.
Yeah.
Cat hasn't done that. And by Meg's account, it's been, like, a couple weeks since Herbert moved in.
Right.
And, like, Rufus isn't himself.
Yeah.
So they realize, like, oh, yeah, Rufus is missing. We should look for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're walking around the house doing the pss, 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 pss.
Yeah, doing the cat call,
the cat call. And, you know, like, Rufus, where are you? And Meg ultimately ends up in Herbert's room. Mm-hmm. He's not home yet. And she goes in the room and she's, like, poking around. And there's, like, a lot of, you know, weird shit.
But nothing, like, out of the ordinary. He does have like a mini fridge.
Yeah.
That is kind of cracked open a little bit.
Yes.
That actually has a light in it.
Yeah.
I'm super jealous of that.
Right?
like, really? But anyways, she does open it.
She opens the mini fridge and Rufus is in the fridge.
Yes.
Clearly yes, dead.
Dead.
Clearly dead. And as she's like, oh my God, which anyone would be, Herbert comes home.
He comes home right then and there
and
when she's freaking out.
And he's outraged that she's in his room.
Yeah, he's pissed.
And next to the cat's body is like this glow-in-the-dark green substance.
Yeah.
And Meg straight up accuses him of killing the cat.
Yep.
And Dan comes in and he's trying to like de-escalate the situation. But he does ask Herbert, like, what the fuck, dude? Like, why is the cat in the fridge?
Right.
And Herbert comes up with a really quick excuse. He's like, I came home. The cat had knocked over the trash. His head was stuck in a jar and he suffocated.
I mean, that could have happened. We don't actually know.
Yeah.
We probably think that, well, he may have killed the cat.
Have killed the cat.
But we don't actually know, but that's his excuse.
Right. And he basically says, like, I didn't want you to come home and find him like that, so I put him in here. Yeah, I was going to tell you.
Tell him, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, Dan's leaning down in the fridge to, like, you know, pick up Rufus or whatever, and he notices the green stuff, and he's like, what is this? And Herbert's like, it's none of your business. Like, very defensive.
Yeah.
And he's like, I thought I was renting a private room. And it's like, dude, there's like a dead cat in your fridge. Like, you got to pack your shit and go. Like, this is behavior. Although, we have my dead cat story.
Yeah, we can talk about that after.
Yeah.
I almost brought it up.
Yeah.
Well,
This is not the first time I personally have seen a dead cat in a fridge. And... And I had flashbacks, like I was in Vietnam. Like, it was just, like, very traumatic for me.
Yeah, I thought about that, too, when I was watching that scene. I'm like, oh, that's funny. It's funny now. It wasn't funny then.
Yeah, I was going to say,
it was still kind of funny then.
I don't know. Like, 10 years ago, it was still pretty funny. Yeah, like, in hindsight, the whole thing was very hilarious. So, we'll get to that. We'll talk about that later. So anyway, Dan lets Herbert continue to live there. Like,
yeah.
Meg like storms out, and I don't know how far ahead in the future. I'm assuming it's like the same day, maybe the next night or whatever. But Dan's in bed and he hears like screeching.
Yeah, lots of noise.
Lots of noise that wakes him up.
Coming from the basement?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he gets up, he gets a bat. He tries to wake Herbert up, assuming that Herbert is sleeping. He's like banging on the door and he's like, "Do you not hear that? Because it sounds like a cat screeching." Very clearly a cat. Mm-hmm. And he makes his way to the basement. He actually fucking, like, kicks open the door and falls down the stairs. Very graceful. Mm-hmm. But when he gets to the basement, Herbert's in the basement. He wasn't in his bedroom.
No.
And he is being attacked by a cat.
By this cat.
By this dead cat. And I was rooting for the cat. I was like, yes, get him. Like, get his ass. If I was Dan, I would have beaten him for not only the way that he talked to me and my girlfriend, but also for, like, putting my cat in a fridge. Like, that's grounds for an ass kicking. So, I was rooting for the cat.
Okay. Okay, I'm still on board with Herbert West. He's a genius innovator, that's all I'm gonna say.
He grew on me as the movie progressed, but like in these first few scenes, yeah. Like
if you're watching it for the first time, it's like, but then he kind of grows on you towards the end.
So he's getting attacked by this dead cat, and Dan comes to his aid, like instinctively comes to his aid because Herbert's getting scratched the fuck up.
Yeah.
And he ends up, I think, like, hitting the cat with the bat or, like, whipping it against the wall.
He whips it against, so the cat is attached to Herbert West's back.
Yeah.
And he's just running in circles trying to get this cat off his back. But Dan manages to rip the cat off his back and whips it against the wall.
And kills it.
And it does. Or kills it again.
And when he realizes that it was Rufus, he, like, is like, dude, like, what the fuck? And and Herbert at this point needs to come clean.
Yes. And he does, though.
He does. Yeah. He tells Dan, he's like, I have figured out a way to reanimate dead bodies. Like, I can bring tissue, I can bring people back to life. And this was apparently what Dr. Gruber had been attempting to do. And this is where, like, kind of Herbert picks up on the research prior to Dr. Gruber dying.
Yeah.
He's completed the research and he knows how to do it.
Yeah.
And Dan, of course, is skeptical. And,
well, yeah.
And I mean, they're looking at this dead cat that's all mangled. And Herbert's like, okay, if you don't believe me, I will bring him back again. And he, like, gets the neon green substance from the fridge.
The reagent. The serum.
Yeah, and he's like, you have to inject it directly into the brainstem.
Which
he, you know, he does. And the cat... And
however, whatever the dose is.
Whatever, 15 cc's or whatever.
Yeah.
And Rufus does, in fact, come back to life. But because he has a broken back, like, he can't really do much. But he is, like, meowing and screeching. Yeah. And who should come through but Meg? Meg comes downstairs and sees this and is like, what the fuck? And she's all bent out of shape.
Throughout this entire movie, her timing is terrible.
Her timing is so bad.
Her timing through the entire hour and, 30 minutes?
Yes.
Roughly? Is just so bad.
Yeah. It's fucking terrible.
Yeah, poor girl. And she's just hysterical yeah. the entire time.
Now, she takes off, and it should be noted that prior to this, we do get a scene where Herbert and Dan are sitting in Dr. Hill's class, and Dr. Hill is showing them how to essentially take the brain out of the skull.
Yeah.
Now, Dr. Hill believes that the brain will stop functioning within 6 to 12 minutes
yes.
after the tissue around it dies, basically. Right. Like, the brain can only...
It's brain yeah, death the brain, or whatever.
Yeah, the brain death is about 6 to 12 minutes. And Herbert disputes this.
Yep.
And he, like, openly argues with Dr. Hill in the classroom. Like, he's breaking pencils to, like, interrupt him.
Yep.
Which I was like, that's funny. So Dr. Hill is like, you know...
Use a pen.
Use a pen. But leading into this conversation, Herbert tells Dan, he's like, that 6 to 12 minutes is false. I can extend it like indefinitely.
Yep.
We can cheat death. I figured out how to cheat death. Mm-hmm. He's like, what I need though is like, I need your help. You're the perfect person to help me. You know, you're respected. You have connections. And I need access to like a human body, which Dan has because he works in the morgue. Like,
yeah.
And Dan, prior to becoming a very eager accomplice in all this, like, he goes from being skeptical and, like, fuck you to, like, active participant. And,
I think at that point, he's just, like, so amazed at, like,
yeah,
wow, you can bring the dead back to life. That's pretty cool. Prior to them going to the morgue, they do talk to the dean.
Dan goes right to the dean to tell him what Herbert's up to.
Yeah. And then, but not in a bad way, though.
Yeah, he's just like...
He's just like, hey, by the way, if we, like, you know... We can do this, then this is going to be a huge, like, breakthrough for yeah, medical
he's
science.
Yeah, like, he's like, this is what Herbert's doing.
Yeah.
And this is what he wants to do. Like, what do you think? And the dean, like...
Dismisses it completely.
He not only dismisses it, but he's like...
Ready to kick him out.
He's like, Herbert's suspended and you're on, like, probation or whatever. It's the stupid, like...
Yeah.
It's.
I think it has something to do with...
the fact that he's dating his daughter.
Yeah, and... Dr. Hill there.
Planted that seed. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's like, oh, well, Herbert West is basically expelled from the school, and Dan needs to have a written apology on his desk.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Have you ever had, oh my God, have you ever had to do that in school where, like, the teacher's like, I want a written apology?
No.
I had to do that once.
What did you do?
Oh my God. I had this teacher, my fifth grade teacher, who traumatized me beyond belief. Miss Fallon. Absolute. Can I drop the C word? Can I call her a C word? Because she was a C word.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you know the word I'm talking about.
Well, exactly. I don't really care. Say what you want to have. Freedom of speech, girl. Freedom of speech.
It's true. I had a teacher, Miss Fallon, in fifth grade. I don't know if she's living or dead. If there's any justice in the world, she's dead and it was painful. But she was...
And drawn out.
Like, unnecessarily long and painful.
There's actually death on people.
Miss Fallon, my fifth grade teacher, was an absolute nightmare to me. She had maybe... It was myself and maybe, like, three other students that she hated for reasons I will never understand. She fucking hated me. And I was, and I was
but
like...
But this is just fifth grade. This isn't even, like, high school.
No. But, like, she would, like, single me and, like, three other kids out. And just target us, and it made the year hell. Like,
that's a bad teacher.
It's yeah. Well, so I
bad had, teachers do exist,
and it was crazy too because like when I moved to the area for the four. I started the fourth grade as like the new kid in town and in school, and they had like a welcome to. It was I had moved to Webster when I was like 10.
I know where you're going.
Just so people who don't know, I moved to Webster, Massachusetts when I was like 10. And my fourth grade teacher had like a welcome to Webster presentation for me on my first day where all the kids wrote about like their favorite places to go in Webster and like made me a big card and stuff.
That's
cute. It was super cute. And I thought like, oh, this is a great
and
school.
And welcoming.
Yeah. So. And then I had Miss Fallon in the fifth grade and it completely ruined my self-esteem. Like I part of my therapy is I had to talk about her and like childhood trauma because she was so awful to me.
Yeah.
But like a couple of examples just real quick. Like she used to flip my desk over in the middle. I'm dead serious.
In the fifth grade,
she'd flip my desk over and make me clean it up in front of everybody. And I would be crying because I was scared and embarrassed. And as soon as I like cleaned it up again, she'd flip it again and make me do it again because don't cry while you're cleaning. Like that was something she did to me and like the three other kids she picked on. She used to do like themed like we had, I think like the year before me, like her fifth grade class did like an Egyptian week or something.
Yeah.
Where everybody had to make like costumes that look like everyone was assigned like an Egyptian fictional or non-fictional person, Pharaoh, whatever, and you made a costume and had to write a report. We did Greek week. Like, that was our thing. Mm-hmm. So my mom, who could make anything, like, helped me make, like, a toga and stuff. And she picked Europa as the person I had to write about. And I remember studying Europa and coming to her with concerns because I was like, she gets, I mean, I'm, you know, I'm 11, but I know what rape is. And I'm like, she gets raped by Zeus. I'm not really comfortable with this.
Well, I'm not defending her in any way, but everybody Greek mythology was raped by Zeus.
Right, right.
But yeah.
So I told her, I was like, I'm not really comfortable with this. And she was like, I don't care what you're comfortable with. You're gonna, like, this is the character that you need to dress as. And my mom made the toga, and she deliberately spilled soda all over it. When I came to school, she took her soda and dumped it all over it. Then one of the final weeks that we were there, we did, like, I don't want to say medieval, but it was like King Arthur shit.
Yeah.
And my mom gave me her old, like, prom dress, and she did, like, trim on it to make it look like a medieval, like, princess.
Yeah.
Came out beautiful. It was, like, red velvet. She had, like, fucking gold trim. I came to school, and all the other teachers were like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. Like, who is that, your mom's, whatever. And Miss Fallon told me that I was white trash. She's like, that looks like something white trash would wear. I was 11. I was 11 years old. The only time she ever showed me any kind of fucking kindness ever was the last couple days at school. You know how, like, you went to public school, like, typically the last few days of, like, the school year, you don't do shit.
Do anything,
You watch movies and whatever.
Yeah, play games.
Well, yeah, play games, watch movies. We watched the Star Wars movies, the original three in order. That was what we did the last few days of school. And it caught me completely off guard. But she was like, can I do your hair like Princess Leia? You got long hair. I think I can braid it like Princess Leia and do the buns. And I was like, okay. And I was terrified of her touching me because I was like, she's going to fucking hurt me. She's going to, like, do something to her. And she did the buns. And she was like, that looks so cute. Only time she was ever fucking nice to me. Huh. Only time. But just to circle back, like, just to circle back to, like, the dean being a dick and being abusive, it just reminded me of Miss Fallon. Like, I had flashbacks to Miss Fallon being.
Yeah. I had bad teachers, but none of them singled anybody out.
Oh, shoot.
Well, like, bad teachers are just awful, and they shouldn't be teaching, but I never had that kind of experience.
Oh, man, she was fucking brutal. And then when I had to go to the sixth grade, the sixth grade teacher that I was going to was best friends with her, and I was sitting outside in the hallway, like, sobbing because I was so scared about going to the sixth grade because I thought it was going to be more of the same. And my sixth grade teacher, Miss Mitsakos, who I hope is still alive and well and doing wonderfully, she approached me, saw that I was crying, and I told her, like, I'm scared to come to you because I think you're going to be mean to me. And she's like, why would I ever be mean to you? And she went above and beyond my sixth grade year to make sure I was okay. And
that's good.
And kept Miss Fallon away from me. I think she knew what the fuck was going on. Yeah. But I think of, like, when I see, like, teachers just being, like, abusive.
Just being
and
bad.
Like, and being, like, spiteful because of personal vendettas. That's all I was like, oh, wait.
Does it trigger you?
It was so triggered. I was so triggered. Oh, my God. Miss Fallon, if you ever listen to this, and if you are alive and I hope you hear this, you're a cunt and I hate you.
There you go. There's a C-bomb. Good for you, Ashley.
Yeah.
Use your soapbox. I never meant to stifle you.
I feel stifled.
Right.
Oh, anyway, so
Ashley reliving her trauma.
Yes, reliving my trauma
to the B movies.
Yes, therapy to the B movies.
Therapy to the B movies.
That's
not a bad idea, actually.
That is great.
When I'm feeling pretty crappy, I just throw on Reanimator and I feel better. It's true.
Oh my God. Oh, well, to circle back about writing the apology letter.
Yeah.
That's where I meant to go.
So you had to write her an apology letter for something you didn't do, I assume.
Somebody passed me a note in class, and it was meant for someone else. They wanted me to pass it to the person next to me. Yeah. And she saw them hand it to me. She read the note, which is not addressed to me. It was addressed to the person that sat next to me.
Right.
But she wanted me to write an apology for disrupting her class. She wanted me to write it 500 times. Like, I'm sorry for disrupting your class. And I
that
wrote
punishment
it.
Never works.
Yeah, yeah. God, I hope she's dead.
Well, it sounds like even if she is, she's probably very miserable.
I hope so. Not...
people, someone who acts like that, especially to other people, never mind children.
Oh, she was awful.
They're not happy people. Like, I've seen them not be very happy.
It's sort of funny, too, because, like, you know, years and years and years later, like, I had a couple people contact me on social media that were also in her class, and they were like, yeah, that was fucked up. Yeah. Like, are you okay? Like, you know, like, are you all right?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Moving on.
I digress.
So, Ashley has had to write one of those letters.
Yes.
So, anyways, Daniel Kane leaves the office of the dean, talks to Herbert West immediately, like, he runs into him.
Yeah.
And basically says...
They come up with a plan.
They do. It's like, okay, well, we're basically screwed. However, we have a plan.
Yes.
Where they... decide to go into the morgue.
They sneak down into the morgue. Herbert hides on one of the, like, gurney things with a blanket over him.
And they basically want to show Dean his work in action.
Yes.
So they wanted a human subject.
Yes.
Fun.
So fun. So they go down to the morgue. They sneak down to the morgue. They have a blanket over Herbert, who's laying on the gurney. The security guard is like, "What do we got today, Dan?" And he was like, "Oh, what does he call him? Like meatball?"
Yeah, because the security guard wanted to look.
Yeah.
He's like, "Only a few."
If you want to see a meatball that got crushed by a semi-truck or something. And he's like,
And he's like, nope.
And that's how he gets access to the morgue. And the two of them are, like, running around the morgue looking for a fresh corpse.
Like, yeah, like, they need, like, a good, like...
No damage to the brain.
Right. Like, oh, this person, shotgun to the... bullet to the brain.
Yeah.
No good.
Someone that got literally hit by a truck. Like, yeah.
No good.
A burn victim, no good.
No good,
But they do find, like, a John Doe that came in that morning. And Herbert has a theory that the fresher the tissue, like, the quicker they can reanimate them.
Yes.
So he has his serum, his glow-in-the-dark neon green serum.
His reagent.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he gives Dan a recorder so they can keep track of how long until this guy comes back to life.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the dean... has found out that Dan is in the building and Herbert is in the building. And he goes to the hospital with Meg. Meg has followed him there to stop him.
Yes.
And he's going to confront Dan and Herbert. And he has that one doctor.
Yeah. Meg basically tells the dean, like, don't do that.
Yeah, like, knock it off.
I don't think she gives a crap about Herbert West.
But not Dan.
But Dan, yeah, she's like, don't, you're going to, like, that's his career. You're going to ruin his career. He didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Really.
The dean has that same doctor from earlier with the terrible bedside manner who's like, nah.
Right.
He has her keep an eye on Meg so Meg can't stop him while he goes down to the morgue to confront Dan.
Sitting in triage or whatever.
And Herbert has since injected this John Doe with the serum and they're counting down. And, you know, as they're running out of time, they can hear Dan being paged outside. They can hear the phone ringing outside. For the security guard who's they're looking for Dan and the dean's making his way down there. Dan's just ready to call it quits. He's like, this was a mistake. We gotta get the fuck out of here. Like, we're not supposed to be here right now.
Yeah. And then Herbert West is like, well, the dosage, he upped the dosage at that point.
He doubles the dosage, which ends up being a bad idea.
Yeah.
Cause that dude reanimates a lot faster and he's really strong.
Yeah, he does come back. And it's kind of like a zombie.
Yeah.
Which makes absolute sense.
Yes.
Because, you know, the dead rising.
So this John Doe gets up and he immediately attacks Dan and Herbert. Now, Dan has locked the door to the morgue. So by the time the dean gets down there, he can't get in. And he can hear Dan, like, yelling for help.
And at this point... I believe the security guard left to go get, like, coffee or something.
Yeah, he was
so
on a break. Yeah, he's not there to let them in or let him in.
Yeah.
So they can, the dean can hear Dan screaming for help.
Yeah, there's a whole hubbub in the morgue that he can't get into.
And the John Doe, like, charges towards the door because that's where Dan is and ends up taking the door off the hinges. But in the process, like, squishes the dean because he's like.
Yeah, he kind of. He doesn't squish him. I think
Get him on the floor.
He gets him on the floor and he picks him up and then throws him into the wall.
Yeah, he starts beating the shit out of the dean.
Yeah.
He, like, bites the dean's fingers off when the dean's trying to, like, push him away.
Yeah.
He does, this dude ends up killing the dean.
He does.
He ends up killing
the dean. Herbert West does kill the John Doe character.
With a bone saw.
With a bone saw, he just pushes through his chest.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now, at this point, you know, Herbert's like, oh, my God, it worked. Not only did it work, but But, like, now we have an even fresher body that we can bring back, like, a lot quicker. So he's trying to get Dan on board with, like, we got to reanimate this dude now. And Dan's just, like, in shock. Dan is just, like...
Right, right.
Like, this has all happened in the span of, like, 30 seconds.
Yes.
And Dan is clearly traumatized.
Yeah, curled up on the floor in,
yeah,
like,
he's
a
like,
fetal position.
He's, like, curled up on the floor in a fetal position, like, shivering.
Yeah.
So finally Herbert, like, convinces him, like, get me the serum. I'm going to bring him back.
It doesn't at that point Meg walk in?
Meg
walks in. She
walks
in after the fact because her timing is so good.
So.
And then immediately goes hysterical. Plus, this is also her father, so
true.
It's a little bit
well, they do,
crazier.
So Herbert does inject, like, that same, like, CC dosage that he gave to the John Doe into the Dean.
The Dean.
And the Dean, like, almost immediately wakes up, and he's just pretty like, wow! Like, he's just like...
And again, he's, like, zombie-esque.
Yes.
You know, kind of like a... primal instincts doesn't really
and
have...
he also attacks Herbert and Dan just as Meg's coming in.
He does.
And she's like, Daddy, no! Because, like, she doesn't realize what the hell's going on. So her father, like, goes into, like, he's cowering in the corner because, like, this is, like, overstimulating as fuck.
Yeah.
And I think the security guard comes back. Doesn't, like, Dr. Hill come in, too?
Dr. Hill comes in.
He's like, what the fuck?
And he takes the Dean.
Yeah.
And puts him in, like, a padded room.
Yeah, he's like, I think he had, like, a...
Which happens to be right next to his office.
A little weird. Yeah.
A little out there. But basically to study him, essentially.
Yeah, so Meg is like, you know, what the fuck happened? And Herbert comes up with this, like, story. He's like, oh, you know, he's like, I came down here to visit Dan in the morgue.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he came down here and flipped out and, like, attacked us. And the security guard's like, who's that guy? About the John Doe that's, like, on the floor with a bone saw through
him.
Yeah,
and I want to say it's the security guard calls the police.
Yes.
But we don't actually see that scene.
Yeah.
It kind of pans to after that. And they're just talking about how the police believed their story.
Yeah. I think Herbert pins the John Doe on the Dean as well. He's like, probably. Oh, like, he was in a rage and he cut the guy open with a bone saw. Or something. Yeah. Just like a really fast talker, very smooth.
Yeah.
So at this point, you know, the Dean is in a padded cell. He's, like, coughing up blood. Like, he's clearly,
he's got a straight jacket on.
He's got a straight jacket. And Meg is in the doctor's office.
Dr. Hill's office.
You know, talking to him. And Dr. Hill's kind of giving her his theory. He's like, I think your father had, like a neurological break or something like that. And he's like, but I want to do, emergency surgery.
Exploratory surgery
to kind of figure out what happened here. And he's trying to explain to her, like, what he plans to do, which is essentially a lobotomy.
Yeah. But he does the whole laser thing.
Yeah. But she doesn't want to hear it.
Frontal. She does give the okay though.
She does.
She's like, I don't care. I mean, it's fine, but I just don't let me know.
I don't want to know the specifics.
Yeah.
And at this point, Dr. Hill is telling, like, he's very convincing. Like, he manipulates her into agreeing.
Yeah, he, like, basically mesmerizes
her. Yeah, into, like, agreeing to let him do this exploratory/emergency surgery.
Right.
And while she's there, like, they're standing by the glass where the dad is, like, freaking out in the padded room.
Right. One-way mirror?
Yeah, there's, like, a one-way,
Is it two-way or one-way?
I think it's one-way.
Yeah, like, he can't see him, but they can.
Right. And, you know, he's telling Meg, he's like, you know, if you need anything, you know, you can confide in me. And if feel lonely because you're all alone right now, like...
So creepy.
And she's just like, like, get the fuck away from me, baby. Right. She's like backing away.
Right. She's not interested.
Yeah. She goes to see Dan to... You know, basically be like, you know, what the fuck happened to my dad? And he's like, I told you the same thing I told the police. Like, this is what happened. But she knows that Herbert is behind it. She knows
clearly.
I think Herbert, meanwhile, is like, you know, he's in the basement, like, you know, studying. He's got, like, his microscope and he's looking at the cells and how they regenerate when he uses the serum.
Research.
Dr. Hill does perform this lobotomy on...
And does some x-rays and stuff like that.
And I think he realizes what's going on. Like, he's not stupid.
Well, he takes the x-rays and he's like, the neck is broken.
Yeah.
Like, this is... like this tissue is traumatized, like yeah. all sorts of stuff.
How is this guy up and moving?
And he's like, this man is clearly dead. How is he moving?
Yeah. So he realizes that Herbert has cracked the code yeah. to extending life as well.
Yeah.
Dr. Hill goes to visit Herbert while Dan and Meg go to Dr. Hill's office, not only to check in on her father, but Dan has some questions about Dr. Hill, like, performing an exploratory surgery. Because Meg does tell him he's doing, and that is a red flag for him. Like, why would you need to do exploratory surgery on this man?
Right.
So they go to his office, and Dr. Hill goes to visit Herbert.
Yeah, he just walks right up into that basement.
He does. He just comes down those stairs and basically just tells Herbert, you're going to give me all your data.
Mm-hmm. And actually, he does say that they'd be working together at first.
Right.
But he's basically like
steamrolling over him to.
Yeah. yeah. He's like, oh, so let's see how my research is doing.
Yeah.
And then he kind of mesmerizes Herbert West there.
A little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. But so West goes and basically shows him an example of, like, dead cat tissue in the microscope.
Yes.
And he puts the serum reagent on it to show it, basically.
Like, how it regenerates.
Yeah.
And while Dr. Hill is looking through the microscope and basically, like, being like, oh, my God, like, this is amazing, and I can't wait to take credit for this.
yeah. He literally says something to that extent.
Yeah, Herbert kind of, like, scooches away from him and grabs hold of a shovel that's in the basement and, you know, sneaks back up behind Dr. Hill and just cracks him in the head.
Yeah.
And when Dr. Hill is on the ground, Herbert, who has become very comfortable with murder, like, very comfortable with it, he just uses yeah. the shovel to basically...
He decapitates the guy. He just takes that head right off.
But then he realizes that this is the perfect opportunity. Instead of reanimating just a whole body, maybe I can reanimate just parts. So he injects the reagent not only into Dr. Hill's head, but also into his body as well to see if there's any... any change.
I love this scene where he takes the head, puts it in the tray,
yeah,
and it keeps falling over.
Yeah,
and he keeps like moving it back up.
So good.
And then he takes one of those, one of those paper things, like yeah. the spike there that you throw, you know, like paper, the receipts on or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And he puts the head on
to
it
hold it
to keep
in
it
place.
Up. Yeah.
Meanwhile,
love and, the deadpan comedy.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Dan and Meg, who are in Dr. Hill's office, and you know, Meg is watching her father just cowering in the corner. And Dan comes across like a filing cabinet that has a bunch of research in it. But one of the files is about Meg,
mm-hmm.
and it's like articles about her and photos of her and a lock of her hair. It's
so
a little
creepy.
Yeah, it's super creepy.
So unpleasant.
Yeah, and Meg decides that, you know, she's going to go in the room where her father is and check on him. So she sneaks away while Dan's looking through this very creepy folder of pictures of his ex-girlfriend. They'd broken up, I guess. They were on the verge of breaking up.
Yeah.
Because she had told him, like, you should go and find someone new or whatever, because, like, she's all distraught.
Right.
Just being a little overdramatic.
A little bit.
Just a little. But she goes in to check on her father, and doesn't he attack her or tries to? He has a straitjacket on, so I don't think he's very good at it, but I know she, like, tries to get her father's attention.
She does try to get his attention, and I think he does kind of lunge at her, but then Dan pulls her out of the room.
Yeah.
No.
So, back at the house, Herbert is, you know, he's looking through his microscope, he's doing research, and he's talking to the now reanimated head
the
of Dr. Hill.
Head.
The talking head.
The talking head.
The talking head of Dr. Hill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Hill has figured out how to control his body, despite it not being attached to him anymore. So, while Herbert's, you know... They're talking mad shit to each other. like they're talking shit.
Yeah.
The body comes up behind Herbert and just knocks him out. Just cold clocks him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he doesn't like do anything with Herbert. He just leaves him.
Yeah,
there.
He just leaves
like,
him
unconscious.
There. But he does take all his research.
But he does take the research
and he takes
and,
the serum,
the serum and everything. Yeah.
yeah. One of my favorite things is that so. Despite the fact that the head is no longer attached to the body, Dr. Hill knows how to get the body to, like, move around. Like, he can control it.
Right.
So he has the body, like, put his head in a bag and go to the hospital but the body uses like a mannequin head as it, like, it's so fucking funny. It's so great.
Like, and it's covered by, like, you know, medical garb, yeah, like the mask and fucking the hilarious. The skull cap there.
Yeah, it's
pretty good stuff. So Dr. Hill also realizes that, so he does these lobotomies.
Yes.
And when he scrambles the brains of all of these, well, I guess at this point, corpses. But you bring them back, so they're not corpses? Anyways, he can control them.
Yeah.
So he's controlling, he can control all these corpses. So he, the head brings, the body brings the head, they go back into the morgue, and basically does the lobotomies on all the corpses there, and then injects them with the serum.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Dr. Hill gets Halsey, the dean, there to basically go get Meg. And brings Meg back to the lab there.
Yeah, the dean attacks Meg and knocks her unconscious and brings her back to the lab within. Is it within the morgue?
I think it's all within, like, there's several rooms in the morgue, you know?
And one of them is Dr. Hill's laboratory.
Yeah.
Which I love that when he first goes into the basement, he's like, quite an interesting laboratory.
It's very funny.
So Meg gets attacked by her father while she's home. The father comes back to the house. He attacks Meg, knocks her unconscious, and brings her back to the lab. Dan returns to the house, finds Herbert, who has just come to, and regained consciousness, and all of his research is missing. The serum is missing.
Everything.
And they realize, like, Dr. Hill, you know, has a weird file on Meg. He has the serum. He has all of my research. Yep. Like, he's got something planned for Meg. Like, we got to go to his office and figure out what the fuck is going on.
Yep.
What I love is, and it doesn't make any sense, but that's what's so great, is, like, how does the body know its way around the hospital while the head is in a bag?
Yeah.
Because they can't see shit.
Yeah.
But he, and the security guard, who is my favorite character, is, like, reading, like, a
boudoir?
Boudoir magazine. He's reading Boudoir magazine, and this fucking, like, mannequin, like, comes up alongside of him, and he's like, is that you? That you, Dr. Hill? And you hear the head, like, from within the bag going, like, yep. He's like, okay, you have a good day. And just, like, lets them in.
Security guard is so awesome.
And the security guard, too, perfect timing. After the doctor is in the morgue, he's like, well, time to take my break. And he leaves, and that gives the dean a chance to carry Meg's body into the morgue, unchecked.
Right? so... I just got to be honest. I feel like the security guard probably lost his job.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a feeling too.
But so they're in the laboratory. The dean takes Meg in there and they strap her down.
Yeah. They tie her down.
Before did they take her clothes off before or after?
So her dad's reanimated corpse strips her naked, which...
Unpleasant,
hard to watch.
Very
uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable, yeah.
So Meg is now naked on this...
But we'll say that he's like a zombie-esque, so...
That's the free pass, I guess, is that he's a zombie.
Yeah.
So the dean strips her down naked, straps her down to this table next to Dr. Hill's head, which is still in a tray. And the body still going around doing all the bidding, like moving things around and shit. And I don't know what the plan is. Are they going to kill, like, is the plan to kill Meg and bring her back? Like, I don't know what the
fucking
plan.
So he could control her, maybe?
Maybe.
Like, he might have been, like, going to do, like, a lobotomy on her. Now he can control her.
True. I wasn't sure
maybe.
I was watching this and being like, what is the end game here? I don't understand.
Yeah.
But well, we find out what part of the end game is in a moment.
Yeah.
Because the Dr. Hill's body picks up his head out of the tray as Meg is, like, coming to and, like, realizes, like, oh, I'm strapped down to this table
naked.
And I'm nude.
Yeah.
And that's never a good thing.
Very bad.
And the doctor is basically saying, like, Meg, I've always admired you. And, like... And
she just starts screaming hysterically
fair point.
Because there's just a head there talking.
There's a talking head being held by a headless body.
Yeah.
And he's got blood all over him.
Yeah.
And it's getting all over her.
Yeah.
And it's fucking gross.
It's so disgusting.
But the attempted sexual assault begins.
Yeah.
And...
I appreciate the originality.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've seen movies where it is just straight up assault and straight up rape and just really, really hard to watch. At least this had me going, well, how is that going to work? Because I was very confused. I was like, I don't understand how this is going to work. Like, it's a head.
Yes.
How does a head sexually assault somebody? But when you got a body holding it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So the body picks up the head and is slowly
making its way down
making
south.
Making its way to her legs that are held open.
Strapped down open.
It is very uncomfortable.
It's going to
it's
be
so twisted.
It's like it's attempted reanimated cunnilingus.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's like that's the professional way to word it, I guess.
But fortunately,
Herbert,
this director had, you know,
a good sense to not go through with that.
Yeah. Dan and Herbert bust through the doors before.
Well, Herbert comes through. Dan sneaks in to get Meg.
Okay. So, right. They come through at different entrances, I think.
Yes, Herbert.
So Herbert busts through.
Herbert's like, I'm very disappointed in you, Dr. Hill, which stops everything. Everything comes to a screeching halt.
Right?
And I was just
this
like,
is where it's like, oh, Herbert West.
Herbert's
kind of cool.
Herbert's amazing.
Like, he's pretty
cool.
Yeah,
Herbert's
right here.
Amazing. And
you know, he's just like completely like
gung ho about stopping this.
Yeah, but very like appropriate about it.
But I do love that, like, because throughout the movie, like, Meg hates Herbert, and yeah. Herbert is very, has, like, clear disdain for Meg.
Yeah, he doesn't
like,
care for
when
her.
When she busts into, like, earlier in the movie, like, when they first meet, he's just like, about her.
Right.
And when she, like, finds her cat, and he's like, I thought this was a private room. Like, yeah. No consideration for her feelings. When she busts in after her dad dies, and he's like, oh, this bitch. Like, when she comes, so funny.
Like, she's always coming in at the worst possible time.
But what I love about this is, like, he still manages to insult her, because because he's like, you know, Dr. Hill, I have to say, I'm disappointed in you. How would the board feel to know that you're going after some bimbo, basically?
Like, oh my god.
You're trying to assault some bimbo.
So good.
Like, just the underhanded, like, insults to Meg. It's like top tier. Like, so funny. I personally was dying when she busted in the room while her dad's, like, being reanimated, and he's like, oh, this bitch. so funny.
Yes, it's awesome.
It's
like,
so good.
The chemistry on set there has just been amazing.
It was fantastic.
So Herbert Busson stops the doctor. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
And so now they basically start going into a brawl. Meanwhile, Dan comes in another way to get Meg out.
He unstraps Meg. He puts his jacket around her because her clothes are gone. And he's like, he's, you know, like covering her and trying to get her out of there. And
which does work, but meanwhile.
So Herbert basically tells Dr. Hill, he's like, you know, I have some plans of my own. And Dr. Hill's like, so do I. And all these bodies spring up. Like, everybody in
the
morgue springs up.
Corpses.
They're all reanimated.
They're all lobotomized so he can control them.
Yes. And they all start attacking both Herbert, Meg, and Dan.
Yes. And it's basically a literal army of the dead.
Yes. And it's absolute chaos.
Yes, obviously.
I believe at one point, I mean, like, everybody's getting the shit kicked out of them. Everybody's fighting back. But the dean is going after Dan. And Meg kind of figures out, like, I think he recognizes me. And she's trying to get his attention. And, you know, when she does get him to look at her and she's just like, stop. Like, the dean kind of comes back a little bit.
A little bit. Like, he's still, like,
Primal.
He's not talking, but he clearly recognizes her and remembers that,
like, this is his kid.
This is his daughter. And he does love his daughter.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So he does. He lets go of Dan, and he goes after Dr. Hill.
Yes.
And
it, you know, keeps the other bodies away from Megan.
Yeah. He's, like, fighting all these other bodies, but he gets to Dr. Hill and takes Dr. Hill's head. And I think he, kind of like the beginning with Dr. Gruber, just, like, squeezes the shit out of it until it, like, pops.
Yeah, until it, like, pops like a pimple.
Yeah, pops like a pimple.
Dan and Meg do escape.
They do escape, but Herbert gets, like, wrapped up with, like, is it Dr. Hill's body? Like,
I don't know if it was his body or if it was one of the other corpses, but apparently all the innards, like intestines, are also alive, I guess. I don't know. It shoots out of this body, possibly Dr. Hill's body.
Yes.
and wraps the intestine, large intestine, I guess. I don't freaking know. Wraps itself around Herbert.
Yes.
Also around his neck. And that's like pretty close to the end that we see Herbert. Yeah.
So Herbert is trying like hell to fight off.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
But Herbert does, I'm not sure if this happens before or after, but he does decide, what he does is he overdoses the one, like, was it Hills, I think?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what happened.
Yeah.
Like his way of like fighting back is he takes the serum and overdoses it into the body.
Yeah.
And maybe that's when it happens with the things. But
ultimately he's getting choked out by a large intestine.
Yeah.
And Dan's trying to save Herbert. He can't quite get to him. But Herbert's like, my research. Get the research. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm going to die, at least he'll have the research.
Right.
So Dan grabs the bag that has, like, the serum, the research, his notes, everything. And him and Meg get the fuck out of there. Now, they're still in the hospital. And they are fighting their way out of the morgue up to get out of the hospital.
Yes.
And Herbert...
There are other corpses
running after her. Yeah. And they get to the elevator. And there is one corpse in particular that gets a hold of Meg and is, like, choking her.
Yeah, strangling her.
Yeah, and Dan can't quite get the corpse off, so he runs to the, like, fire axe, like, the emergency axe for fire emergencies, gets that, comes back, and he's, like, hacking off the thing's arm.
Yeah.
But by then, the damage is done, and Meg has been choked out.
Yep.
Like, she is unconscious, there's no pulse.
Yeah.
He's doing compressions in the elevator, similar to the ones that he was doing on the woman earlier in the movie, where he's trying to resuscitate her. They get Meg upstairs to the, like, emergency department where it's chaos. There's, like, fucking people running around everywhere. There's, like, corpses. There's fire. Something's on fire at some point. Like, it's chaos.
Yeah, well, you know, most emergency rooms are usually chaos. Yeah.
But it seems like it has come up from the morgue into the emergency department.
Yeah.
Like, shit is just, there's papers flying everywhere. Like, it's fucking chaos. And Dan, once again, is faced with the dilemma of, like, when do I stop trying to resuscitate this person? And he does bring her
into an actual...
Yes, and that doctor room. From the beginning is, like, trying to assist. Like, they do...
She is.
Yeah, they use a defibrillator. He's doing compressions.
Yep.
And very similar to the beginning, the doctor's just ready to be like, nope, call it. She's done. Just, that's it.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she has not been dead that long. Like,
yeah, I firmly believe that she probably would have come back in real... Like,
had they kept going.
IRL.
Yeah.
Like, if that happened in
had
real
they,
life.
Had they kept
she
going.
She wasn't, like, it's only been, like, a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
So, she probably would have come back.
Yes.
From just a strangulation.
Yes.
You know, it's not like she was shot or anything, like, or, you know, no internal organs were crushed, things like that. But they basically call it, or so we thought.
Yes. So, they call it. They take the little monitors off Meg.
They leave the room.
They leave the room to give Dan time to grieve. He is distraught. Meg is dead. It's been all for nothing. And then he realizes that he has the serum and the research.
Sure does.
So he gets the serum out of the bag, and he fills up a syringe with the CCs that he needs to bring her back, because he has learned fuck all in this whole situation.
Mm. Yep.
And that is... It ends with him injecting Meg, and that is...
And you hear her screaming.
Yeah, you hear her screaming.
It fades to black.
Yep.
And then you hear the scream.
Exactly.
And so, that's it.
That is Reanimator.
I love it.
I loved this movie
so much.
I loved it.
I've been wanting to do this movie since season one.
What did you... technically, the body count is a little tricky because there's no bodies. Like, they come back. But I had five.
Who's the five?
I had,
so we can count the cat.
I had five bodies and one cat.
Okay.
So I think I had Herbert, Dr. Hill, the Dean, Meg, and who was the fifth one? Oh, fuck. Maybe the woman at the beginning that he was trying to resuscitate. I don't know.
She didn't die on screen, so I would have not counted her.
I forgot who the fifth one was.
Yeah, I actually didn't count it because I knew that everybody came back. So to not burst your bubble, Herbert West is not dead.
Okay.
I'll get into that after because there's sequels. But yeah, so Meg... Maybe.
If
you can't see me, but I am shrugging.
Perhaps.
Perhaps. We don't know. I'd say the Dean is 100% dead at this point.
Yes.
Carl Hill is 100% dead.
Yes.
Okay. The cat, yeah, sure. The cat died twice. They should, that should be listed twice. Other than that, I wouldn't count anybody else. Because at that, by the end of the movie, at that point,
everybody's back.
Well, everybody's back, but they probably die again. I don't know. But there's also too many to count at that point for me.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually do that.
Star rating.
4, 5.
Wow. 5.5. That's the highest you've ever given anything.
I am comfortable giving this a 5.
All right. There you have it, folks. The very first 5 stars from Steph.
I love this movie. I think this movie is glorious. I think it was well directed, well written, acted excellently. The special effects alone are incredible.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. All practical, obviously.
Yeah. I'll give it a 4.5. I really liked it. This is a lot of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Very well, like you said, very well done. Good pacing. Yes. Everything happens in quick succession. Nothing's particularly drawn out. Characters are a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's not really any loopholes in the plot here.
It's funny.
It's
really funny.
Yeah.
Do you have any interesting tidbits about this movie? I know you do.
The budget was $900,000, box office $2 million.
Nice.
So, good. It is based on the 1922 serial novelette by my guy, H.P. Lovecraft. Loved him. Herbert West Reanimator. That's the name of the novel there.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know or are familiar with Lovecraft, he's the guy that did the original guy. That's where Call of Cthulhu came from.
Okay, yep.
So, that's basically his storytelling. Like, he does...
Isn't War of the Worlds H.P. Lovecraft as well?
That was H.G. Wells.
Oh, sorry, okay.
Yeah, and H.P. Lovecraft
gotcha.
Was this guy. Yeah. Anyways, so... Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned this, but... directed by Stuart Gordon, produced by Brian Usna. Gordon thought, the director, there were too many Dracula films and not enough Frankenstein films. I agree.
Yeah.
I 100% agree. I love the mad scientist trope.
Yeah.
I don't think it is done enough. I think it is such a fun, story, you know? So Gordon thought that there were too many Dracula films, not enough Frankenstein. 100% agree. Someone asked if he read Reanimator. Gordon, familiar with Lovecraft's works, did not read it. It was long out of print at that time.
Okay.
So we went to the Chicago Public Library and read their copy. See, kids?
Libraries are important.
Reading is fundamental.
Oh my God.
Reanimator, brought to you by your local library.
Fund your local library.
When shit hits the fan this year, go to your local library because none of them know where they are. Originally, the story was adopted for the stage, but then decided to make it in half-hour television pilot, which also, I believe, did not come to fruition. But they were told that the half-hour format was not sellable. So they made it an hour, writing 13 episodes. That obviously changed. But the special effects technician, Bob Greenberg, told Gordon the only market for horror was in feature films. Okay. Which at that point, probably, I don't know. It was the 80s. So 80s horror is its own genre.
Yeah.
So maybe.
The best genre. Yes. The best.
I mean, at this point, being 2025... horror in serial television form does work very well in most cases too. Bob Greenberg, the special effect technician, introduced Gordon to Brian Usna, who produced the film. Usna convinced Gordon to shoot in Hollywood because they were initially in Chicago.
Yeah.
And made a distribution deal with Charles Band's Empire Records. You might know Charles Band from Full Moon Features. Yep. So they made a deal with him in return for post-production services, which is why you can find Reanimator and all the other Reanimators on the Full Moon Features streaming service.
Nice.
Yeah. Usna described the film as having the sort of shock sensibility of an Evil Dead with the production values of hopefully, wait for it, The Howling.
Oh, another callback to the season.
Right? The Revenge of Frankenstein was a major inspiration. That is another film I want to say was originated in the UK. I'm not 100% on that, but something to that extent. The morgue was based on the Cook County Morgue, which in Illinois, Cook County, which was newly built and featured cutting-edge technology. What kind of technology you need to deal with dead cadavers? I do not know, but sure, we'll go with that. Gordon opted for this look because he felt old morgues were overdone in horror. I agree. Because whenever you're watching this kind of genre kind of thing, you go to the morgue, it's always like old school and shady.
Yeah.
You know, kind of creepy. It's not like clean, you know, fine lines, sharp lines, you know, lots of stainless steel, you know. Jeffrey Combs, Mr. Herbert West, only took the role because he needed and is... he needed a job, basically.
Been there.
Right? Like, he did it for the money, and yeah, that is the only reason he did it. Assumed that the film would never reach a larger audience.
Now it's a cult classic.
Now it is a cult classic, love you're it. Correct. And people love this movie, i.e. me. The reanimating regent itself was a chemiluminescent agent, luminol, which forensic investigators use luminol to detect trace amounts of blood at crime scenes, okay? So, as it reacts with iron and hemoglobin, aka blood, it glows. So, when it's sprayed on an area, trace amounts of an activating oxidant make the luminol emit a blue glow that can be seen in a darkened room. So, all that glowing, also practical.
Nice.
Yeah. I love it. Spawned two sequels, Bride of Reanimator, also excellent.
We'll have to do that in another season.
We will. And Beyond Reanimator, which I don't think I've actually seen.
Okay.
And that was made in, like, the early 2000s, I think.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It does have Herbert West in it. Herbert West does come back in the second one, Bride of Reanimator, which is why I could tell you that, oh, by the way, he's not dead. He does come back. I don't recall if he talks about that in the movie, about he's how just he just didn't there. Die. Yeah, he's still doing things. The reception on this, Roger Ebert, that tool.
Oh, God.
3 out of 4 stars. Walked out somewhat surprised and reinvigorated, if not reanimated.
That's clever.
Right. New York Times, fast-paced and good deal of grisly vitality, even had a sense of humor, albeit one that would be lost on 99.9% of any ordinary movie-going crowd.
Good thing we're in that 1%.
Right? Point 0.1. The only, 0.01.
The only time we're in the 1%.
Occupy the Red Robin. Rotten Tomatoes, 94%.
Of course, it's great. It's a great movie.
Yeah, perfectly mixing humor and horror. Only thing a movie effective than Reanimator's gore. Okay. The only thing more effective than the Reanimator's gory scares are its dry deadpan jokes. So, 100%. That's pretty much all I have on it. I love this movie. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. I'm actually a huge Lovecraft fan as well. Like, I love most all of his stuff. Color Out of Space was Lovecraft.
Okay.
Lovecraft, everything centers around, like, Massachusetts into Rhode Island, but more specifically western to central Massachusetts. So literally here, you could consider Lovecraft country.
I was going to say, we live right smack in the middle of it.
Exactly. So the Dunwich Horror, also obviously Lovecraft. Dunwich is a couple towns north of us.
North of you.
It's about a half hour north of me.
Yeah.
So I mentioned The Color Out of Space. Have you seen The Color Out of Space?
I haven't, no.
It is absolutely phenomenal. They live on a big pond. That pond is the Quabbin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Quabbin Reservoir. Just to, you know, bring it home. But I'll pretty much watch any, like, Castle Freak.
Great. Okay, yes.
Barbara Crampton.
Yeah.
Actually, I think she was in the new, was it the original or the new one? She might have been in both. I don't know. I love her. She's great.
She's great.
I actually recently watched a series on Peacock called Hysteria that had a scene with both Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Crampton in it.
Love it.
Yeah. So they're super fun.
Yeah.
But anyways, that is also Bruce Campbell. You should probably watch it. It's not a bad series. anyways, that's all I have.
A lot of good info.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you had picked this movie, you had done the research, you provided us with a lot of facts, but you also did the recipe this week. And do you want to talk about why you chose what you chose and what it is?
You're looking at me like,
eh?
Yes. So in honor of Arkham, Massachusetts, and Lovecraft, New England clam chowder.
Hell yeah.
This is not that bastard Manhattan style clam chowder. Okay, so I don't actually hate that clam chowder. I think it's perfectly fine. But it's not.
It's not
New England. Yeah.
No.
So basically, Manhattan clam chowder is the red.
Mm-hmm.
And New England is the white.
Yes.
So my clam chowder actually turned into more of a seafood chowder.
Fine with that.
Right, because I had leftover calamari from when we did the stuff squid.
Ah, that's right.
And also I had leftover haddock because of dinner this week.
Yum.
So might as well use it, right? Clam chowder, super, super easy to make. Super yummy. It involves bacon, onion, celery, carrots, garlic, potatoes. So what you want to do first, now you need to, so cut your bacon up into like pieces or whatever, and you render the fat out of it.
Okay.
So to do that, you keep your oven at, or stovetop, I guess, at a low heat.
Okay.
So it doesn't crisp the bacon up.
Gotcha.
It basically renders the fat out to be like, you know, the delicious greasy fat of bacon. So you do that. Then you add an onion. You saute that in with the bacon. And then garlic. Same thing. And then the celery and carrots. So you saute that all together. And that is the order that you put things into, though, as well. So you do the bacon first. And then it's the onion. And you let that saute till it's soft. And then you add the garlic. And you do the same with that. And then you can add the celery and the carrot together as well. Obviously chopped up. Let that cook for, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes. Let that soften up. Okay. And then you'll add, I used 4 cups of bone broth.
Okay.
Just because I make it here at home.
Oh, yeah. So your bone broth is amazing.
So chicken stock or vegetable stock, whatever the hell you want to use. So 4 cups of that. Now, you add the potatoes in, but you cut the potatoes up into basically cubes.
Yeah.
Boil that separately. Like,
okay.
Let that cook separate, okay? So you put the stock in. You also add a couple small jars, like the 6.5 ounces of clams. This is how I did it anyway.
Okay.
With the water that's in there. You want the
clam
juice.
So like minced clams or?
Yeah. Or you could do like whole, I guess, however you want it. I used minced because I knew I had other stuff to put in it. So that along with the clam juice that's in the cans, like you do not drain them. I added another 8 ounces of clam juice as well. Okay.
Nice.
So all the bone broth or stock, if you will, and the clams and the clam juice. Actually, I added the clams first and then the stock, but whatever. And then I also added the calamari and the haddock at that point. So then bring it up to temperature, let it boil, simmer for a little bit. Add the potatoes in. And at the very end, you add in I used half and half. You can use heavy cream. Any of those.
Do you have a preference? Like, is there one that you think tastes better or works better?
No, I think it's your own personal preference. I like to use half and half instead of putting just a buttload of heavy cream in a thing, you know? Like, you could potentially use milk. I wouldn't use milk.
Yeah.
Because you want that, you know, that thick texture. Creamy consistency. Yeah. But yeah, that's basically it. Then you let it simmer, and then that's it. Throw some oyster crackers on that.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. So yummy. If I missed anything, I apologize.
Well,
it was a lot into it, but it will be on Instagram.
I was going to say, this recipe is going to be on our Instagram. Again, that's Baking to the Bee Movies. And if you want to provide your own, like, seafood or clam chowder recipes, if you prefer the Manhattan style and you want to provide us with a recipe for that you think tastes really good, I'm sure we're willing to try it on our own.
You know, my mom has an aunt who she would have 4th of July cookout every year. She still does, I think, which is crazy because she's older now. But she always made clam chowder. That was kind of her claim to fame.
Yeah.
With clam fritters. Love me a good clam fritter. Those are awesome. But she always made the Manhattan style. I don't know why. Maybe it's because she lives in Connecticut. But she lives, like, on the Massachusetts border of Connecticut. Like, not on the New York side.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that's what she did. And it was always really good.
Yeah.
Like, I never had a problem with it. It was still tasty.
If anybody wants to submit, like, a Manhattan-style clam chowder recipe, bakingtothebeemovies@gmail.com, we'll give it a shot. We'll do a taste test.
I'm not opposed to Manhattan-style.
Yeah.
But it's not New England.
I was going to say, I grew up on New England style. It's my favorite. Yeah. I've had Manhattan a couple times, and I never really got into it. I always go back to New England style.
Because it's more of a soup than a chowder.
Yeah,
you know?
I like chowder.
Yeah?
Say chowder.
Say it right.
Say it right. Say chowder.
Say chowder.
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 Chowder. So yeah, check out that recipe on our Instagram. Steph, did you have anything else for this one that you want to talk about?
I could talk about this movie all day.
It's great.
I had trouble finding it to stream.
Okay.
I found it on YouTube.
I found it on Fandango.
Okay. So on YouTube currently, I'm assuming it's going to come off of YouTube shortly because there were no ads and there was no rental price.
So it was like the, you know, it's like when somebody goes into the movie theater on a new release and films it from their phone and then uploads
it. This wasn't filmed from their phone.
Well, I'm just saying how people do that. Like, I think somebody the other day I saw it. Obviously I didn't watch it, but somebody was like, "Yo, you want to watch Nosferatu? I filmed it on my iPhone." and it's them in the movie theater filming it.
You see people walking.
Yeah, you just see people walking by the aisle.
You hear like people crunching on chips and things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like one of those uploads that stays online for all of 2 hours before it gets pulled for a copyright infringement.
I feel like I was able to like hit it. I'm like, I searched for it and it wasn't on anything. And I'm just like, okay, Fandango. But I didn't even think of Fandango.
Yeah.
I tried Amazon and it wasn't available to rent
I couldn't get it to work on Prime because you had to get some subscription to some weird service. And
like
I was like, no.
Midnight Pulp or something.
Yeah, I'm like,
I'm like,
good.
I've never heard of that. Maybe it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm good. I'll pay the $3 to watch it on Fandango. Like, I'm all set.
Yeah, I would have tried something else if I just was curious about YouTube, and I'm like,
but you also
said
it's on the Full Moon Features.
It is on Full Moon Features. I don't actually subscribe to Full Moon Features anymore. I didn't really watch it too often.
Yeah.
Not often enough to really
justify the price.
Not that the price is a lot for that, but if you have Full Moon Features, it's definitely available there.
Yes.
But we don't have it anymore. So I found it on YouTube. It's probably going to be pulled very soon.
Yeah, I was going to say,
but
watch
it
out.
At the moment, as of Thursday, as of a couple days ago, it was available to watch without ads, without paying any, like, you know, like a rental fee or anything. And it wasn't, like, on there, like, coded super weird, so somebody wouldn't have picked up the copyright
to
find it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, that's my
story. I love it. So I think that's about it. I'm ready to go eat this clam chowder, or seafood chowder.
It's really seafood chowder.
Next week is our finale. It's our season finale before we take a break, and we've got one hell of a closer. It's
all I have to say is the cast on it is awesome.
It has one of my favorite actors. I love him in everything I've ever seen him in. He's great.
He's a very good actor.
Yeah. It also has one of my favorite actresses from Wet Hot American Summer. I'm very excited. I love her. I love everything she's in. But I think that just about does it for us for this episode. So we're going to go have the seafood chowder. I'm going to dig my car out of the snow and make sure we're good to go, that the roads are still clear. Is it still coming down?
It is still snowing, but I can see, like, the road from here.
And yeah, and it's fine. Because your town actually knows how to treat the roads. Mine doesn't. Yeah. I think that does it for us.
I think so.
So we'll just go through the usual again. We are on Instagram, Baking to the B Movies. You can email us directly at bakingtothebmovies@gmail.com. We are available wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like, subscribe, share, smash that follow button.
right?
And once we get some new social media, we'll add those accounts to our pages so you guys can follow us. It's just I'm over Twitter. I'm done with it. I'm done.
I didn't like Twitter before.
I had no issue with Twitter. I mean, it was problematic at times, but now that, you know, that fucking melted wax figurine runs it, I can't deal with it. Jackass, I hate that fucking prick.
You are not alone.
Yeah. that was one of the things, is when that Cybertruck blew up in Vegas on New Year's Day. Like, one of my friends was like, was that you? Did you do that? Because I was out there. Like, no, right, it wasn't right, me. I had nothing to do with it.
I wish I could take credit for that.
I cannot take credit for that. But this has been an absolute pleasure. We will be back in a couple weeks again with our finale. And if you need to catch up on episodes before the finale, head on over to our RSS feed. I did it. See, I did it.
Our. Like, it's 15 minutes
shall
to the hour. Hey, right.
you can catch up on all the episodes there. We've got them all the way back from the very beginning when we started this a couple years ago. Crazy.
I know, right?
It's crazy.
God, we're so old.
I know. Fucking fossils over here. Actually, my birthday is coming up. I'm a fossil.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Fun,
oh, my goodness.
Fun.
All right. We'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Ashley.
And my name is Steph.
This has been Baking to the B Movies, and we'll see you soon.
Later.
Bye. Thank you.